Craven Cottage, make some noise for the team of the Fulhamish Podcast!
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Well, 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 what a day for Fulham. The opening day of the Premier League season. And we got a 2-2 draw against the Champions League finalists, Liverpool. But just saying we got a 2-2 draw doesn't paint the full picture, does it? What a performance from Marco Silva's men, and in particular, Alexander Mitrovic. I heard someone saying, can he cut it in the Prem? And I hear the answer, yes, he fucking can. Of course he can. What a performance from the big Serb on the big stage. Jurgen Klopp may have said the pitch was dry, but there is nothing dry about my panel today. Starting off with Mr. Dan Cook. Hello.
Hiya, Sammy. How are we doing?
Not bad. Need the explicit warning 30 seconds into the pod. Drew Heatley, how are you doing?
Hello, Sammy. Get me a fucking Palinha tattoo. Thank you.
Oh, my word. I'm going to have to be like double explicit. Farrell Monk, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Have you got a little beeper there on your little alongside the horn?
No, I mean, I've got like canned laughter if you want it. Oh, I've got that. That's not what I meant to play.
We can do it in post-edit. That's fine.
Nah, it's okay. It's the first game of the season and we drew against Liverpool. I think we can afford a couple of swear words. Sorry to all the kids listening, though. What an afternoon. We're going to discuss everything from the game. Alexander Mitrovic, of course. And at the end, we've got a stack full of your questions. Absolutely loads came in today. But let's start off, as ever, after a match with some three-word reviews. And Dan Cook, I hear there was a lot of them.
Yeah, last check, 197. I mean, I went to Twitter mainly just because I like Twitter. But yeah, we had 197. A lot of them were, as you would expect, centered around our Serbian pyromaniac.
You're not going to read them all out now, are you?
All 197.
Have we not got time? I thought this was a big bumper Premier League podcast.
You can do it if you want. We'll just stay here for an hour while you read out every single one of them.
I've cherry-picked some. So we've got FFC Louis with Mitrovic's golden boot as he sat, unfortunately, for not actually that long. It was about 24 hours on his own at the top of the golden boot charts. We had the wonderful Jack and Lars with Mitro proves point and Chad Perris with yes, Mitro can. Then moving away from that, we had Ab Grandad with Virgil on toast, which I liked.
Yes, I saw. I loved that.
There was a very popular one from Mike Levy with Red Prem Redemption, which I did like. And then two nice ones to sum it up, Fulham Japan with We Are Proud and Chris Ballard with We Are Back.
We're back indeed. And what an atmosphere at Craven Cottage. The sun was shining. Fulham put in a good performance. We all thought we were going to get thumped, and how wrong we were, Drew. We saw that lineup come out an hour before. Not going to lie, I glanced away from my pint and thought, oh God. When we saw Rodak and goal, I was quite surprised. Obviously, we knew that it was going to be Tosin and Tim Ream. We've been talking for weeks and weeks and weeks about whether the old guard can cut it at this level. Mostly, we were pretty pessimistic. And how wrong we were, because Marco has drilled them to death. Wow. It was just so fast-paced from minute one to minute 90. And Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, for a large portion of the game, didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly it. It's the pace. For me, the biggest difference between when we were last in the Prem in, you know, properly for our 13-year tenure and the first, and we turned up again in 2018, the difference was the pace, and it's only got faster and faster and faster. But we matched them the whole game, and if we can do that against Liverpool, we can do that against anyone else in this league. But it was, you know, the lineup came out, I looked at it. Obviously, there were no real surprises. I thought there was very little benefit to chucking Leno in today with what we thought was going to happen. It just felt like it was probably a good chance to say to Rodak, okay, look, this is your chance, knowing full well that, you know, it's, there's low expectation on a game like that. Obviously, Ream in, I mean, again, why would you put somebody like Shane Duffy in? That was never going to happen. So the lineup for me, I'd made peace with long ago, but it was just that pace. It stuck with the way it started, and the way we kept that up with them, I was thinking there's no way these players can do that for 90 minutes. And amazingly, they did it, and we did it in the stands. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, Farrell, the atmosphere was absolutely rocking. It really makes a difference just having like a small strip of fans in the Riverside, I felt, because you do now get that noise from all around. I mean, it's going to be amazing when that top tier opens. But the ground was looking beautiful. Obviously, you know, that pitch was bone dry. It was a real disgrace, really. Made Coventry's pitch look good, didn't it? But yeah, it was a fantastic atmosphere and matched by the performance on the pitch. I remember just thinking a few minutes before kickoff, I was like, wow, the crowd's up for this.
There were so many good vibes about yesterday, you know, turning up quite early on. The sun was shining. It was a beautiful day out. I was there quite early handing out flyers for the FST newsletter, but everyone had loads of smiles on their faces. Everyone was really up for it. And I think that translated to the players on the pitch as well. You could tell straight from the off that the players were up for it. I don't know whether Marco Silva's been showing a lot of the players about the doom and gloom that a lot of pundits and fans alike have been saying about this team. But straight from the off, it looked very positive. We were playing on the front foot, which was in comparison, strangely, to the Liverpool team, who turned up looking quite tired and underprepared, whereas Fulham looked prepared for it. They had a clear game plan every single time that Liverpool tried to play it forward, whether it was Tosin, Ream, Paulinho, Reed, Robinson, Tete. They were all defending on the front foot, trying to nip it off the toes of the Liverpool attackers, and it worked really, really well. And we pressed them in the right areas and we attacked in the right areas. And it lasted for all 90 minutes. It was an absolute joy to watch. And it meant it wasn't just smiles entering the stadium, it was smiles exiting the stadium too.
It was indeed. It was definitely smiles in the pub afterwards as well. Dan, I enjoyed on Match of the Day that they clarified that they thought Jurgen Klopp was wrong to say that Liverpool were poor, and they actually really pointed out, well, it was because Fulham made them look poor, and it really felt like that. Yes, Liverpool weren't fully at the races. You need that against a side. Well, you need it against all of the big six sides, but you really need it, especially against the top two. If you're facing Liverpool or City, if you get them on a good day, you can play as well as you want, but they're going to absolutely slaughter you. So there was an element of like Liverpool looked a bit off it, but Fulham just really did not let them settle, and we pressed them and pressed them. And even from that first 3 minutes, when I think it was Pereira who got one, an interception, just got his head on it, went to Mitrovic. He kind of had a half chance, took it outside of his foot, which was just the wrong decision from Mitrovic. But it was that early statement of intent that you're not going to get a moment's peace at the back today. And I think as Farrell and Drew alluded to, I was just surprised that we were able to keep that up for 90 minutes and not get tired.
Yeah, I think Marco and his team deserve so much credit for this, because this is where the difficult thing this season is, right, last season we had a formula that we could use and basically plug and play every game because we knew we'd go out and dominate teams. And this year we're going to have to adapt. And this is the most adaptation I've seen since Marco Silva took over. And it was brilliant. You know, we looked to stop Liverpool doing what they wanted to do, which is why I think it made Liverpool look like they had a poor day, because we just actively stopped them doing what they're good at. So we set up with two banks of four when we were out of possession, which I thought was really, really good. You had Paulinho and Reed patrolling in front of that back four. The lines between them were really tight. It meant that none of those Liverpool forwards could basically get the ball in between our midfield and our defence, which is that danger area where you want to keep them away from it. And it means that, one, they're not receiving the ball there, and two, it means that Tosin and Tim Ream don't have players charging directly at them because they don't have the space or the time to do it. I think that's part of the reason why Roberto Firmino was just completely anonymous, is because we cut out all of the area where he operates. And I thought it was brilliant. I think Liverpool, yeah, were poor, but it was so much to how we forced them into playing. You know, they ended up having to go over the top and try and get in behind us. We set up our line really well. The number of times they played sort of aimless over the top through balls that were easy for Marek to sweep up, I thought it was brilliant from us.
Yeah, Drew, let's come on to Mitro's first goal. There have been a few warning signs, that chance that I mentioned in the third minute. I think Cabano should have done slightly better with a cross to find Mitrovic, who was open. He absolutely fizzed it across, and Mitrovic couldn't quite get his head to it. And then the goal. Really nice build-up play. Smart from Cabano, kept himself onside when he was offside, but he played himself back on. I think Matip helped in that regard. A Kung Fu Kenny sweeping cross to the back post. And Alexander Arnold was just a rabbit in headlights, wasn't he? The great train as Alexander Mitrovic was roaring towards him and just overpowered him. And look, Alexander Arnold is not a famous header of the ball. He has not just outdone Maldini or Cannavaro here. But still, you just saw in that moment, everything that we knew about Alexander Mitrovic was shown right then. He actually showed other qualities later on. We'll talk about the Cruyff turn and the penalty a little bit, but just that moment was prime Alexander Mitrovic, what we saw all of last season. And I just don't think that it matters who you're playing against in defence, whether it's Van Dijk or Alexander Arnold. You put a big ball in the air like that from Kenny Tete, no one fancies Alexander Mitrovic coming at them. And what a moment. The place erupted.
It really did. It really did erupt. And, you know, the first game of the season, it sets the tone. And you know, the performance sets the tone, and so many different narrative elements of the narrative set the tone. And for Mitrovic to open the season's account from open play, from a header, you know, absolute vintage Alexander Mitrovic, it was exactly what we needed to set that tone. I thought, you know, I actually said it with my biggest optimistic hat on, I reckon we could get a 2-2 draw today, but our goals will be from set pieces. So to open the scoring from open play in such a textbook way was exactly what the doctor ordered. And, you know, I think we're all so bored of sort of we're all so bored of defending Mitrovic to people who don't understand Mitrovic. And, you know, yesterday it was just the perfect way to announce our return. I think the last two seasons that we've been in the Premier League, we've not belonged. We've been out of our depth from day one. And I think even, you know, whatever happened throughout that season, all the little slivers of hope that we got, I don't think we ever really in our heart of hearts felt like we belonged. And Mitrovic showed yesterday that he belonged, and we showed yesterday that we belong, just from first to last minute. So it was the perfect way to start the day, and to reward everybody in the stands as well, who literally put in a shift. Because I'm telling you what, it's hard. I sound like an old man, and I am an old man in many ways, but it's hard to keep the energy levels up for 90 minutes, I find. You know, you settle down and you sit back into the game and you start watching the game, but you have to watch and you have to sing and you have to be, and everybody kept it up from 1 to 90 yesterday. And I do think you need to be commended for that, because it ain't easy.
Yeah, it's an impressive time to keep it up. Farrell, coming on to Mitrovic, we play football on a Thursday, and it was quite funny. We were just getting ready to play a football match that actually never happened. It got cancelled. It was really weird. We got to the pitch and they were like, no, sorry, you can't play today, which is a bit annoying. Anyway, that's another story. And you know how that kind of, you have that pitter-patter beforehand, and you're wearing a Fulham top, and a couple of the people were like, oh, how do you think Fulham's going to get on this season? And someone said it, didn't they? You're like, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. But Mitrovic can't cut it in the Premier League. And I enjoyed what you said afterwards. You were like, yeah, it's fine. I have two cards in either pocket. One is explaining how Alexander Mitrovic can cut it in the Premier League, and the other one is that we are not Norwich City, and we are not necessarily a yo-yo club. We were there for 13 years before this recent up and down period. Do you think, honestly, I wonder if after one game, it may have put the debate to bed slightly. Yes, okay, if somehow Alexander Mitrovic didn't score for the rest of the season, maybe you could bring that up again. But I just looked at that performance yesterday, I was like, that's it. That's what we know he can do. It's what we've been saying for all this time. It may have just kind of given us at least a month's respite from the whole tired Mitrovic debate. And we've seen some pundits on Twitter and what they were saying in the week about Mitro, the same old cliche. So at least one thing I feel like we can put in a box. Whether Fulham stay up and all of that, still very much up for debate. It was only one game, but I'm hoping that maybe just people will put some respect on Alexander Mitrovic's name.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, though, is that one tired cliche may be replaced by another tired cliche towards the end of next season. They might bring back that tired cliche that Fulham have a neutral stand, even though that we don't anymore, for example. Or they'll bring back up the clappers, which we didn't see the clappers yesterday. We saw the sort of cloth, almost like neckerchiefs that people were using to try and keep the sun off them. But that's just football. It's full of tired cliches. It's full of like really, really bad, you know, off the cuff comments that sum up an entire football club. You know, we're not all, cheese eating, port drinking football fans. I mean, I probably am. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But not all of us are, and that's okay. That's all part of the whole experience. And it's all part of the conversation generating that kind of like small talk, you know, especially if you're turning up to a football game where you're not necessarily socializing with these people on a regular basis and they're trying to sort of fill the silence with something. Oh, he's wearing a Fulham shirt. I know this little tidbit about Fulham. Mitrovic can't do it in the Premier League. Go. And that's okay. We can all deal with that, those sorts of things. But yeah, it's all part of it. We all know that Mitrovic can do it. Yesterday certainly proves that. He's proved it before as well. And I love the fact that he had a bit of a Tom Kearney-esque performance towards the end of that game. The fact he was picking the ball up in deeper positions and was able to relieve the pressure on the back line quite well. It reminded me of Tom Kearney's performance in the playoff final against Villa, where, you know, he was just able to sort of pick the ball up, not worry about the opposition trying to harry the ball off him. He was nutmegging Matip at one stage on the left wing, which was a beautiful little moment, which doesn't get as much publicity as his little Cruyff turn that sold a couple of Liverpool defenders. It was a wonderful performance. I think it's a performance that got better and better as the game went on. I thought that he was deserving of his goal, which was, you know, a classic one, as you've touched on before, but I thought the performances around him were better at that particular time, but then he showed his worth more and more, and you know, he's deserving of all the headlines he got this morning, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think there were two things we saw from him, which were sort of two sides to him, which was the normal Mitrovic side that we are used to seeing. So I had a look at the numbers. He won 13 headers in that game, and the entire Liverpool team won 19. So he's nearly outheaded the entire opposition, which is sort of the sort of thing you expect from him. But I was thinking while the game was going on, I can't remember the last time I saw him get in behind a defensive line as often as he did on Saturday as well. You know, the number of times that he tried to make runs past that Liverpool back four just to give us a different option, just to give us a different dimension, let us be a little bit more direct, get the ball into dangerous areas. You know, this is a guy who's still wanting to work on his game, and he wants to do anything that he can to help this team. It was just such an all-round complete performance.
Farrell, as you mentioned there, the moment where he kind of, I don't really understand what happens with Jordan Henderson, but he swats him away like a fly, like, you know, go away. And then Jordan Henderson's like all limbs just goes on the floor. And then you see him, he was running into a blind alley. I was like, oh, you can't, you know, what are you going to do here against Virgil van Dijk? And then Cruyff turns in. I'm just like, what are we witnessing? That was up there with the moment where Harvey Elliott slipped, and actually Fulham went in after that as well, as my most enjoyable moments of the day.
I love how much Jordan Henderson takes his frustration, the fact he couldn't handle the Fulham team yesterday, out on the referee the whole time. He was outbattled in midfield by Harrison Reed. He obviously didn't like Mitrovic throwing him to the floor. But every opportunity Henderson got, he directed his anger at the referee. It's almost as if the leader of the entire team tries to make excuses for their bad performance. I don't know what it is.
Let's come on to the middle of the pitch, Drew, because I'm really confused how João Paulinho got lost on his way to Man City and somehow ended up at Fulham. What a player. And in the pub afterwards, Jack was like, oh, I told you he was a good player. I was like, yes, Jack. But yeah, I mean, fair play, because he just unbelievable. He was everywhere. Just every moment there was a fire on the pitch, Joao Bellini was there to put it out. And you rightly mentioned Harrison Reed, who also played fantastic. And there maybe just is a little bit of a new shiny toy element to the praise that Bellini is getting. But wow, Drew, we have picked ourselves up a player. And if he is at Fulham in 12 months, then I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah, it's Moussa Dembele, the first vibes, isn't it, with Joao Bellini. I was thinking about what song will we sing for him, and I was thinking, we all dream of a team of Palinhas, but I felt like we had one at times yesterday because he was absolutely everywhere. At half-time, my dad actually said, oh, I think he might get, with this ref, he might get sent off just because he is so intense, so physical and so active. But he didn't, because he does it in the right way. He's so, yesterday he was so precise in everything that he was doing that he didn't give the ref much of a chance to do anything. There was the one contentious element just with our goal, just in the build-up to the goal, but he was fine. He was incredible. And I he's my new favourite player. It's that shiny toy thing, as you said. I just absolutely love the work rate. I love it's the work rate combined with the quality. And it's like you say, you know, lost on the way to Man City. It's not a reach. He has been absolutely incredible in what I saw yesterday, and I'm buzzing to see what it will be like in the rest of the season. I think yesterday he really helped out Ream and Tosin as well, letting them have a bit more of a comfortable game. So yeah, I just think Mitrovic gets the headlines, but when you're looking for man of the match, I'd think look no further than Joao. Is that what Jack says? Joao?
Oh, just say it. We can just say it normally. Although I did learn yesterday how to spell his name, because I kept getting it wrong. So I now just have it in my head as Palhinha. That's how I now remember how to spell his name, because it was really annoying me. I was like, oh, there's so many H's in there. I don't get it. But just Palhinha. And
I need the spelling for my tattoo. So thanks.
Oh, yeah, of course. Maybe check before relying on my little phrase. Dan, you had some numbers on Palhinha. What came through?
Yeah, just some really standout things, which I guess, you know, we've all seen the eye test of, like, we saw what happened, but the numbers really back it up. But 25 pressures in the game, which is the most on the pitch between either side. 6 tackles, most for Fulham and the equal most in the match. 5 progressive passes, equal highest for Fulham. 6 passes into the final third, which is the second most for Fulham. And he won 5 aerial duels, which was only behind Mitrovic and Van Dijk. Like, it's just such a complete all-round midfield performance, you know, off the ball, with the ball, in duels. It's just incredible. And we've got such a well-rounded midfielder here. And it's so nice. I think that we're going to have a real nice balance in this midfield, because he just anchors it all.
Farrell, one other player that I want to come on to who I feel like deserves particular praise is Anthony Robinson. Now, look, we could spend the whole podcast, I think, genuinely going through the starting 11 and even the subs as to who deserves credit in the game. I want to give Ream credit, Tosin credit, Pereira credit. And there were so many good performances on the pitch. Bobby Dekker-Dover-Reed played brilliantly. But for me, Anthony Robinson on the left-hand side, you're up against not just Mo Salah, but also Trent Alexander-Arnold. The way that they switch positions as well, like, you just don't know who to mark. And for 95% of it, I just felt like Anthony Robinson was spot on. He really didn't give Mo Salah many opportunities to, you know, cause the havoc that he can. Yes, I know that the first goal does come from that side, but I don't really think Robinson was fully to blame there. And Robinson's had a lot of stick, but we always said all through last season, we said, look, he has the physicality and the pace to cope with those top wingers that we're going to face week in, week out in the Premier League. And I think we saw a little bit yesterday as to why Marcus Silva has persevered and kept with the faith in Robinson, because that's the performance that he can put in.
Yeah, and I think you've covered it quite well there already. That, and I don't want to go over the whole sort of like Robinson debate that we've had at length over the past year anyway.
Yeah.
But more than matched up to Mo Salah athletically. There was that point towards the end of the game, and Robinson's already run his absolute heart out, and the ball goes up to Mo Salah, and Mo Salah time and time again gets his body in the way and sort of either goes down or makes a chance of it or gets a goal. But Robinson was able to match him for it, get in the right position and hand him off brilliantly, and it was a beautiful moment. And then sold him a dummy as well. It was a beautiful moment that summed up a very, very good, capable performance from Robinson. And he was up and down that left-hand side. He was backing up Bobby Decker Dover Reed very, very well. On both sides, that was happening quite a lot. The amount of times that Robinson was backing up Reed whenever that ball was played over the top for him. And on the other side, Harrison Reed, it wasn't so much Kenny Tete as much, but Harrison Reed on the right-hand side, whenever that ball went past Cabano and was able to make a little bit of space, Harrison Reed was always there to support. And it shows the level of detail that Marco Silva has instilled in this squad, that we feel like we're better than the sum of its parts. And Robinson was a big key in that, as he was key throughout last season. As much as he's got his detractors and doubters, he is key to this team. That's why he starts so many games under Marco Silva. And I think this performance yesterday probably solidifies his position at left back for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I will disagree slightly, Sammy, that I do actually think the first goal is a lot his fault, but it's a very easy mistake to make. I think he just thinks he can get there and he gets dragged into Harvey Elliott and he just doesn't quite get there. And it's not, you know, yes, it's a mistake, but equally, if he does nip in there, he then cuts out what would have been a dangerous attack anyway. But the way he played Salah out of the game, especially in the first half, was so commendable. I mean, in part, yes, through his speed, because, you know, the number of times Salah tried to get in behind him and he just couldn't. And I don't think he's very often been matched up against a fullback that quick. But also in the way that he was, whenever Salah had his back to goal, Anthony Robinson was right on top of him. And it just led to Salah drifting further and further inside the pitch, getting narrower and narrower, just to try and get away from Anthony, which is such a credit to a fullback if your winger just had enough and just decides to take up different positions.
Liverpool seemed to have a game plan of trying to hit over our fullbacks, and it wasn't working. They changed up a little bit in the second half, but they still tried it quite a lot, and it just didn't work for them because I don't think that they were prepared for how good our defensive performance was going to be. And that's probably why, and you know, it's just not going to be very popular, but I think it's more down to good play from Harvey Elliott more than a mistake from Anthony Robinson for that first goal. But, you know, it's I don't know, again, fine lines a little bit. But overall, I think that Robinson more than made up for it, whatever mistake that might have been.
Harvey Elliott was annoyingly good when he came on. I was just a bit like, oh, he really wrote. I really enjoyed a moment where, I'm not going to say it, parents, but where we sang Fabio Carvalho's name and then very much did not sing a nice song about Harvey Elliott. But I mean, it definitely wound him up and he put in a good performance, to be fair to Harvey. Let's come on to the penalty, Drew. I must admit, from the stands, I was a bit surprised to see it given, just because it was a bit of a swan dive from Alexander Mitrovic, and I felt like that was the kind of moment that a lot of referees would go, no, get up, stop diving. I thought it was quite a brave call to make, particularly against Liverpool, and the referee got quite a bit of stick yesterday. I thought he made a couple of baffling decisions, particularly in the middle of the park, but I think he got the key one right. But just so incredible from Alexander Mitrovic to do that to Virgil van Dijk. Apparently, it's the first time that Virgil van Dijk has been successfully dribbled past. I mean, one hell of a stat anyway. That's, I still can't quite wrap my head around it. But yeah, right call and brilliant play from Mitrovic.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to think, there's been some sort of masterclass in coaching about, obviously we've had VAR back, which is something that we've not had to deal with in for a season. But those little intricacies, play for them. Because I was the opposite. I thought from where I was sat in Hammersmith end, I thought it was a penalty. But I think I got sort of sucked in by the way that Mitrovic went to ground, because it was when they had the coming together, quote unquote, it was so perfectly timed. But so when you look at a match of the day, obviously it's the coming together of the knees, and it's light, but it's a penalty, and it's the nuances and it's the real sort of minute details that they've obviously said, look, guys, don't worry, there's going to be a video scrutinizing this. Like, if you feel the slightest bit of contact, or if you can play for the slightest bit of contact, which I think Mitrovic did, then then they're going to look at it, and you will probably withstand the scrutiny of the video referee. So I think it was a perfect way to sort of get it to sort of back you up, because I don't think that's not given in the championship at all.
No. And Drew, I also thought, like, it was quite a big moment, the penalty.
I mean,
last year he was fantastic from the spot. He only missed that one penalty kick, I think, early in the season against Stoke when we were 3-0 up and it didn't matter. But Mitrovic's penalty record in the Premier League is not good. You know, it really cost us that game at Sheffield United. And he's up against Alisson. And that was for him to stick that away is a huge boost, because we need Mitrovic to be prolific from the spot. It's going to be crucial for us in games. I was delighted to see that go in. I can't say I wasn't nervous before that. My nerves eased on Mitrovic a lot last year from the spot, because he did just seem to tuck them away with ease, but that was a big one.
Yeah, and I think our penalty record as a club in the Premier League certainly recently has also been awful. I mean, obviously, I still have PTSD over Lookman at West Ham, but there have been more famous misses than anything else, certainly in the Premier League. But yeah, so I'm preconditioned, like many of the rest of us, to just think, well, okay, I'm really glad we got the pen, but I'm pretty sure this is going to get saved by Alisson. I don't think that Mitrovic is going to sky it or miss the target at all. I just think you're up against Alisson. I think he'll probably save it. But it was two things. It was the confidence and the precision of the stroking it into the bottom corner, but also the celebration. Mitrovic wasn't releasing sort of the frustration that, oh my God, I can't believe I've actually scored that penalty. He knew he was going to score that penalty. He was just in his element. He was like a pig in muck, and is exactly what you want Mitrovic to be like. We'll talk a lot about setting the tone on the first day, but for him now, after those two goals and the way that he dispatched that penalty and won it himself, we know he's the old crazy hand. He's a confidence player, and we've got a lot of confidence players in our squad, and we always seem to attract them. But he's a confidence player, and that's exactly the tonic that we needed for him on day one. And I think that's going to light the spark, if you excuse the poor attempt at wordplay.
He did learn his lesson though from the first goal and didn't knee slide on the bone dry pitch.
I'm surprised his knees didn't get burnt.
Yeah, that did look like what happened if I tried to like knee slide in like Sunday league. It was like, no, that was a bad idea. Ouch. He learned his lesson on that first one. Dan, the equalizing goal, I can't lie and say I wasn't a bit disappointed. Obviously, what could have been, and considering how solid we were, I felt like for the final 10 plus 5 added minutes, actually it was quite an avoidable goal. Mix up between Ream and Tosin, really. I think Tosin just doesn't think that Ream's going to get anything on it. He's slightly caught out by the way it flicks off his head, and just a little bit of luck as well, isn't it? The way it just falls between Nunes and Salah. But it was an unfortunate one. And really, I genuinely think Fulham could have held on to a win yesterday. I don't think Liverpool were creating that much.
No, yeah, I agree. I think we probably would have held it. It's just one of those scrappy goals it is. And there are a couple of defensive mistakes in there. You know, I think for a start, too much time to deliver the ball in, which, you know, at that point we were a little bit stretched, a little bit leggy. Fine, it happens. Yeah, Tosin maybe should make it a bit clearer. If he gives Ream a shout there, it's probably into the Riverside stand off Tosin's head. And slightly Kenny Tete as well, I think, sort of got rid of his defensive duties when Darwin Nunez has stolen in between him and Tosin, and he's sort of gone untracked once Tosin gets sucked into the ball. But it's going to happen, isn't it? You know, we can't be defensively perfect constantly, and it was that moment, and it's Liverpool, and they're clinical, and it happens. It was a little bit of like a punch in the gut. I remember exactly when it went in, and my head sort of went down, and you're like, oh, that was our chance. That's 3 points gone. But I think very quickly after that, the reality came through, and you're like, 2-2, take it, a point. Wow, this is still incredible.
Yeah, it didn't seem to deflate the crowd too much, Farrell, and everyone was just really hoping that we could hold on to the 2-2. Liverpool put pressure on in stoppage time. Henderson hit the bar, and just a really great point for us. Yes, 1 point is not a massive amount in the scheme of what we need this season. We probably need about 8 wins, 8 draws if we're to try and stay in the league. But that is such a bonus point, considering that not just pundits, all of us thought that was going to be 3-4-0 Liverpool going into that game. It really sets us up nicely. A really big bonus point. Got to follow it up, though, now with either a result against Wolves or a result against Brentford, ideally both. But we've got to follow this up now with wins in easier games.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, I think I heard 2 or 3 times this game being described as somewhat of a free hit as well. So,
yeah,
you know, to come away with a point is massive. But, you know, against Wolves, against Brentford, those are the games that we're going to be really needing to take points off as well. But every game is an opportunity to pick up points. And as long as we stay competitive in every single one of those games, we're giving ourselves a really, really big chance here. Hopefully in a few weeks' time, we'll at least have our first win under our belt, which would be much, much sooner than the last 2 Premier League campaigns, that's for sure. And the only other question is, Sammy, what is the criteria to sound the horn?
Oh, I have not even thought about the horn this season.
And I mean, I not the horn you did at the start of this pod. That I'm not talking about that one, because that would be every loss that you would have to do that one.
I don't know. I'm going to have to think about it. I don't feel like there could be any criteria. Maybe top 10?
Yeah. Also, we're never sounding the horn after.
It has to be good. If we stay up, then great.
The horn is a reward, Dan. It's not a right. We need to be top 10 to be rewarded with Sammy's horn.
I'm having a think. I'm not sold on it being top 10. That was off the top of my head. I will have a think, but it's got to be a bit more than just a draw on the opening day. I feel like
Maybe if we change it to HMS Piss the League, we change it from that to sort of like Piss the Bottom 10 or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy with not HMS quite as catchy, is it? Yeah. I will give it a thought. If you fancy emailing me for what the horn criteria for this season should be, then I'm all ears. Right, we're going to take a break. Your question's coming up very, very shortly, but I want to get everyone's opinion on our latest signing, Shane Duffy. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part 2 of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy James here with Drew Heatley, Dan Cook and Farrell Monk. Thank you to all of you who are backing Fulhamish in the Fulhamish community, which is over on Telegram. We're having so much fun over there. It's really, really great. And it's just a way of supporting the pod, really. So if you enjoy what we make, either as a podcast, or you enjoy reading our articles, or enjoy watching our videos, you can help support the content. And as a bonus, you get access to our Telegram group. We've got 3 chats, a main chat, a tickets chat, and also a transfers chat, which is still a great source of information for all the latest transfers. If you can help us, it's much appreciated. You can get a 2-week free trial, link in the description of this podcast, or just go to fulhamish.co.uk and look for the link that says support Fulhamish. We really do appreciate it. But of course, if you can't afford to join us or you don't want to, then all our podcasts, all our content, content remains absolutely free. It's just a way of supporting us if you can. And we hugely appreciate the 100 or so of you that do, because it means a hell of a lot to us. So thank you very much. On Friday, we got a new signing. Not going to lie, did not see this one coming, Dan. Shane Duffy on a season-long loan from Brighton. Jack Collins will be happy. A boy in green representing Fulham on the pitch. We saw him very, very briefly in the Liverpool game. He came on for the kind of final 3-4 minutes. I'm not even 100% sure he touched the ball, but he came in there just to shore up the defence. He's 30 years old, which took me by surprise. I thought Shane Duffy was a hell of a lot older than that. It feels like he's been around for years. What do you think about this one? There was a lot of rolled eyes to this transfer. Maybe a bit above our station, I feel like, to be rolling our eyes at Shane Duffy, was my opinion. He's an experienced Premier League centre-back. And look, clearly we're going for someone big, aren't we? We clearly want someone like Issa Diop or Jan Vestergaard. But I do think that this seems like a really smart move. Bring him in for a season, it's a stopgap, and you never know, he might be all right.
Yeah, I think part of the reason for the response is that it's not the sexiest of signings in many regards. Poor Shane Duffy, he's not blessed with looks either, but he's
on that.
He looks like me.
I mean, we have been blessed with some good-looking centre-backs over the past few years, I've got to admit.
I want my centre-back to be ugly. I don't want a pretty centre-back.
Yeah, and he ticks that box. But
I'm looking at an ugly back four right here then.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like he's...
But I think it's a sensible one, because if you look at his numbers last season, they were all right in the games he played. He's very good in the air, which is going to be useful at times, especially if we have to sit a bit deeper. The experience is great. If you look at the Brighton fans' response to it, it's a mixture of, yeah, great servant for the club, still plays at a good level, but probably right for him to move on, which I think sounds all right for us. He is stepping down from Brighton because Brighton are a better team than we are. And so just because he's not deemed good enough for them doesn't mean he won't be good enough for us. I don't think he's been brought in as what's going to be a first choice centre back, but a very capable rotation option. And also in games, you know, it's not a massive Marco Silva trait, but invariably at times this season, we will need to lump on an extra centre back. And if that's someone as good in the air as Shane Duffy, that's exactly what you want, right? If you're sitting deep, is someone who's going to get in there, win headers, clear his lines.
Yeah.
One unintended consequence of Shane Duffy coming on yesterday was working out, when he did come on, if we had made the allotted substitutes in the blocks we were allowed to. Because I had that conversation with my brother about, wait a moment, we've already made three subs. We're only allowed to make five in three blocks. But I forgot that we had made a double substitution in one block already. So we were allowed to make one more after that. And I wonder whether that plays in the back of someone like Marco Silva or the manager's minds this season. Like, do you save that last block of substitutes just in case with 5 minutes to go you get an injury and then you can't make a sub? Or am I reading the rules wrong? Are you allowed to make a sub if someone goes off injured? Because you're only allowed to make them in three blocks, are you? Apart from half time.
I need a check. I thought you could only make it in three blocks, but I don't know if an injury.
Three blocks and half time is separate. So,
yeah. I'm too old for such a fundamental change in the rules of football. Like, I forgot about it and remembered on Saturday, and I was like, this is too much for me. Like, this is changing everything that I know, and I don't like change.
How are people with VAR? How are you with VAR, Drew?
We benefit from VAR more than we don't historically, I think, so I don't mind it. And also it's like a little extra fun.
We do need to put it on the screens though.
Yes.
Apparently there was a technical issue.
We've never done it. We've never done it on the screen. We haven't done it. We should, because it's just ridiculous. Like, why? It's classic Fulham, like, we're going to keep our cards close to our chest. It's not clever. It's just annoying. Like, I don't know what's going on. And then you get the double cheer from the Liverpool fans on both goals. And you're like, fuck off. I just need to know what's going on. I need it on the screen if you're going to do it.
I do think they have to. I'm pretty sure that was because I was always under the impression that if there is a big screen, it has to say VAR goal review. And I always remember it because they made two exceptions for grounds that don't have digital scoreboards, which at the time I think was Anfield and Old Trafford. I think they've now installed them. I know the two grounds you are not expecting to not have digital scoreboards or like TV screens. They had scoreboards but no TV screens, and it was Old Trafford and Anfield, and they said, oh, they'll try and put it on the scoreboard somehow. I don't know if they've now installed a screen. They probably have, but
I reckon they installed that screen at Anfield the same day that the guy who does the announcements at Liverpool's first day, which is about 80 years ago as well. I think he's been doing it for that long.
The most dour goal announcements.
Yeah, for such a passionate club, and he's the one that represents them, and he's always like, goal scorer number 9, Roberto Firmino.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have that than the announcer at like the Brentford announcer or the Chelsea announcer who got unceremoniously sacked a few years ago. That's funny.
Nothing is
there.
Worse than the Brentford announcer. Nothing makes me hate football more than when I ever hear that absolute tosser go like, "Come on, you bees!" You'll hear it when we play them later this season. If you don't know it, he is an awful, awful man. I mean, he might be a nice guy in fairness, but whenever he gets on the mic, nothing annoys me more. But yeah, Shane Duffy, our latest signing. We'll see what happens. I imagine there's going to be more signings probably later this week. It feels like one of the centre-back rumours is incoming. Vestergaard seems to be getting closer. But anyway, we'll touch on that on the Thursday club. We're going to take a break. Afterwards, we're going to look at some of your questions. Part 3 of the Fulhamish podcast. Let's get into some of your questions then. Loads coming through. Chris Harris asks, does yesterday's excellent performance help or hinder Silva in the transfer market? Interesting one, this. And do you think Tony Khan and Alistair McIntosh gave Marco a text saying, not too bad the squad, is it? They seem to do all right with who you had out on the pitch. Maybe stop giving us such stick in the press conferences there, Marco. Can't win, can he, for Marco Silva? Dan, what do you think? Is this any hindrance? Maybe not hindrance, but do you think maybe Marco's going, okay, actually, maybe my squad's better than I realised or gave them credit for?
I don't know. I think, if anything, potentially a help, because straight off the bat, we've shown, right, we are competitive, we're ready. And look, I never thought we'd do this, but you look at some teams when they come up and they do make their transfers with half an eye on relegation in the next season, the Championship. Whereas I think Saturday was a massive green light for, right, if we get the next two or three signings right before deadline day, this is very much a team that's capable of staying up and not just inching over the line, but maybe getting there with a little bit to spare, because we've got a very good manager with a good core squad that just needs a couple of additions. And I think it's an easy now for Marco Silva to be like, right, I just need two or three more in these positions. Help me out.
And also a sign to players maybe umming and ahhing of whether they want to come to Fulham. If you've not seen that performance yesterday, if you watched that first on Match of the Day, you might think, oh, that looks a little bit of fun. You might also be thinking, like, that looks like a hell of a lot of running. I might give that one a miss. Seems like I need to be a marathon runner to play for Fulham. Bryn Paulson asks Farrell, we haven't touched on his performance yet, so a good moment. He says, after Pereira gets his final ball sorted next game, will we win the league by 8 or 10 points?
I'm glad this actually came out, because I thought that Andres Pereira, a really lively performance. He was really central to the way that Fulham played. I've got to say, apart from maybe Niskin's Cabano, he was probably one of the weaker performances yesterday. That's to say that it was a weaker performance in a very good performance all round by a lot of players. And I don't think that's any slight against him. You know, it's coming into a difficult game. I think absolutely they point out that it's a bit of end product. And I think once that comes on, absolutely, I think that he's got all the makings of a player who's really ready to fight for the cause. He really sort of got it tactically as well. Dan mentions earlier that in defence, we were very much a 4-4-2, but in attack, he sort of mirrored what Harrison Reed was doing on one side, the same way that Fabio Carvalho did last season, operating in that sort of left-hand forward position, not really a winger, not really a central playmaker, but sort of operating in that area, getting to the byline when he needed to, doing little balls here and there. But also, he was very tenacious as well, much like Fabio Carvalho. Maybe Marco Silva thought, okay, I've lost this integral part of my team, but I still want to play largely the same way that most of this team are playing. So I'm going to try and find a player who's able to do the job that Fabio Carvalho did. And it was a very sort of Carvalho-esque performance with his own sort of spin on it. But yeah, I think the talent is there. I think the effort's there. I think it was, again, not his best performance, but there was certainly a lot there that makes me hopeful that he'll be very, very good this season.
I think if you play Football Manager, Farrell, you'll know that the role is called a mezzala for a central midfielder that likes to get into the half spaces between the wing and the central midfield.
Well, I think I ordered a mezzala at lunch earlier today as well.
I love nothing then more than a mezzala for my for like a starter, just for while I'm at an Italian. Drew, we've got three questions here from Brett Rowlands, and I think you can answer all three of them.
Sure.
We can snap through these. First of all, what is the feeling on Marco wearing a t-shirt? For all of Scott Parker's mistakes, dressing well wasn't one. Are we happy with the gaffer and a tee?
Absolutely, mate. Marco Silva's pure Colin Farrell vibes. He is far cooler than Scott Parker will ever be. Scott Parker with those absolute awful stripes on that blazer. What is that? Immediate relegation straight away. Sorry. T-shirt all day. Keep it simple.
Brett's next questions. How were the concourse beers? The upgrade to Hell's?
I didn't manage to get one because the queue was too long and I didn't miss any of the game. Even Don Betts said it's the first game that he never missed any of it. So I can't comment.
Wow. I had a Camden Hell's before the game. I enjoyed it. I have remortgaged.
How much was it?
£6.80. But Dad bought it for me though, so I didn't. I bought the parking, but Dad bought the beers. So that was the third question. Why on earth was Hey Jude played just before kickoff? Now this is a controversial one.
I am ready to answer this question.
I think we're all chomping at the bit.
Go for it.
Right, listen, when I was a young lad, I have a memory of walking through Alice Holt Forest with my dad, and we were singing about Brent. We was actually first started singing about how we hated Brentford, but we always used to sing in the 90s, Hey Jude, with Fulham. So we always did it. And I remember saying on Thursday Club last season, like, we'd sing about the club and we wouldn't sing about players. And Hey Jude was one of the songs that we used to sing at Craven Cottage. So I'm sure I'm not alone in the fact that I'm pleased to bring it back. Brentford can F off. It's not their song. I think we've got the history, and they've just had it talked about recently. But I was buzzing that it came back. I thought it came back at just the right time. I thought it was perfectly pitched. I was absolutely gassed to the gills, brother. It made me really excited for kickoff, and it was perfect. Long may it return. It's not Brentford's. Thanks.
Okay. Any wider panel? I was a little bit uncomfortable with it, but I mean, I do get Drew's point.
I was firmly on the side that this is going to be the first and last time I hear it just before kickoff. But after Drew's little rant, I'm actually convinced a little bit. I think I've been converted. I do think it's really, really rogue to play just before kickoff. There was a discussion on one of the groups, whether it was on Telegram, about what song that we should play just before kickoff. Yeah. And there was all sorts of suggestions. And I think the obvious one was Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. But I am reminded about that they tried to do that in the first relegation season in 2014. And it just didn't work. There's something about playing that song over the tannoy just doesn't get the crowd going per se. But if we make it a thing and keep going at it, then perhaps it could work. And I think what they actually tried to do was actually do it so that just before they kick off, they start playing the song, and when it gets the they actually turn the music off as the players are kicking off, so it keeps the
sounds
keeps
class. What I mean, I was
I don't understand I was why not- it doesn't work.
I wasn't around in the 2013-14 season because I was on my year abroad, so I don't remember that, but I think that sounds absolutely quality.
I mean, any other suggestion, I think the club will be welcome to it, that's for sure.
Drew?
I think it's a case of keep it simple, stupid. Like, we, you know, trying to get 20,000 people to do one thing is quite difficult. Give it something like that, which everybody knows the tune, everybody can get behind it. Everybody then was singing it pre-kickoff. It worked, and it has a history. It does. And I will fight anyone to the death who disagrees.
Fair enough.
There's also an element that these things come about naturally, like the at halftime London Calling. At first, no one did shout the "Live by the River," but now it's become a thing. But that's happened over like a decade. So if we are going to get something that's going to really sort of get 20,000 people singing like Muppets or Stupid People, as Drew says, it's going to take a long, long time.
Yeah. And we had a question here that I'm going to read more out as a point, really. He says, do you think the match day atmosphere has improved? No clappers. He says, love the banners / scarves against Luton. Hey Jude, a questionable yet good song. I think the club have learned from the last games of last season as the ground was rocking yesterday, need to make Craven Cottage a fortress. I'm not going to go on to the ticket prices now, but I still think that's slightly linked to it. But yeah, the atmosphere does seem to be improving. I'm happy things like the clappers have gone, and hopefully as soon as once the Riverside Stand opens more, and maybe the club can focus on other parts of the ground, and maybe it feels as well like they've had a summer as well to think about a few things, you know, small things like the beer getting better, the transfer of the summer from San Miguel to Camden. Small things like that go an awful long way, and long may it continue that actually some thought's given to it and it's not just the same old stuff trotted out year after year. More than happy to try new things. Hey Jude, whether it's popular or not, it was nice to have something different. Someone going, should we try something a little bit different? Should we play a different song before a game? That's nice. I approve of trying things. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But better than just to kind of go, oh no, we're just going to stick with it because it's what we've always done and it's fine. Quick question for you, Dan. I feel like we've nearly touched on every player in the team, but Andrew Henderson would like to ask, just how good was Ream yesterday? One thing I noticed with Ream's performance, and maybe the defence in general, is I felt like they were sometimes a bit panicky, and I wondered if it just came from them knowing that they were playing Liverpool. There's a couple of times where either Tim or Tosin or Robinson could have just said time to each other, and they were a bit sometimes, but they were mostly just because they did a clearance when they could have controlled the ball. Often it wasn't really a big deal. It was just like they were obviously nervous and panicky. But I thought, second goal aside, which was a little bit, I don't even know if you can blame Ream. You've got to go for a header when you see it, and if no one gives you a call. I thought it was a good performance from Tim Ream. And clearly, João Palhinha giving him some protection helps as well. But considering all that was made of him before the game, and I feel like we know from Tim Ream's character that he'll be fully aware of what was being said. I thought he did absolutely excellently, and I could not be more pleased for him.
No, I completely agree. And I think it was a really good entire unit defensive performance. And Tim Ream had a couple of standout moments within that as well. When you look at the clearance off the line, which it weirdly got missed off the match of the day highlights, which was quite a significant moment in the game. And there was also a moment when Niskan Skibano hit the post. That was Tim Ream nipping in front of Darwin Nunez, defending on the front foot very well. So I think he played really well. I think his strengths, we all know, are in his sort of reading of the game, and he struggles more when he gets isolated. So it's always going to help when you have that protection. But that's not putting his performance down at all, because he did his job well. But to preface all of it, it is also partly just that whole unit defending together. And I think people sometimes have this argument of which one's the better one between Tosin and Tim Ream, because some people think that Tim Ream's churning out better performances. However, I do think that actually Ream playing next to a centre back of the quality of Tosin brings his own level up as well. I think they meet in the middle where, you know, they complement each other well, but they Tosin especially helps Tim Ream out a lot as well, I think. But you can't put him down at all against Liverpool. Yeah, we all thought he'd get in a lot of trouble, and he did his job very well.
Yeah. Drew, obviously, we think there might be a signing or two even before the Wolves game. We've got Bernd Leno, who is chomping at the bit on the bench to start as number one. Shane Duffy's come in. Do you think Marcus Silva sticks with particularly Riemann Rodak? Let's focus on Riemann Rodak until they make themselves droppable, because it seems like the sensible move to me. But also, let's say we signed Issa Diop this week. It's going to be bloody tempting to put in those players who should be higher caliber, who have higher reputations. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. I think there's always two sort of sides. You know, sentimentality in football is rife, and it will always be rife. And they say there's no room for it, but there is, and there's always going to be these conversations. I think that Marco Silva is a man and a coach who probably has enough credit in the bank to be pragmatic about these sorts of things. And somebody like Tim Ream, I think he'll understand if we did bring in our starting centre back on, you know, marquee signing, that they'd come in. We know that Marek is a little bit perturbed about Leno's arrival, and you know, fair enough, rightly so. But again, I don't think many people outside of Marek Rodak would begrudge Silva for putting Leno in between the sticks. He's been brought in to be our number one. Nobody's stupid enough to think that's not the case. I find it incredible that we're talking about, Ream, you know, should we drop Ream when a new centre back comes in after all of the chat pre Liverpool? But look, that's an excellent position to be in. I think, to sum it up and be quick, I think Leno starts pretty soon, probably sooner rather than later. We can't drop Ream at the moment anyway. It's a moot point. We haven't got anyone to do it. We're certainly not going to do it for Shane Duffy. God bless the ugly duffling.
What? Great. Off the top of the dome.
I will say that Marco Silva has set himself out in the past season, anyway, in that championship season, as very much, if you perform well, you keep your spot. And I think we saw that throughout, especially, you know, even when you look at like when Nico Williams came in and Kendi Tete came back from injury and actually stayed out of the team because Nico Williams did nothing to suggest that he should be dropped. And now I think that puts a little bit of a test on that, because if you're talking about Rodak versus Leno, Ream versus whichever new centre-back it is, there is a little bit more of a difference in quality than when you look at the alternative options we had in this squad in the championship. And so I think it might put, I think those merited selections based on, oh, you haven't done anything wrong, so you can keep your spot, might slowly disappear this season when we have actual superior players available to play.
I'd respect Marco, though, if he carried it on. It's a good point you mentioned there. I remember when Nat Chalobah got that run in the team middle way through last season, and he played well, I think, against Hull away, and he kept his spot for two or three games after that. And then I think he had a bit of a poor performance. Then he lost his spot. If we go up to Wolves and it's Rodak and Ream again, I'm more than happy with that. And if that's the way that Marco goes, then I've got to respect that. Thank you all for all your brilliant questions today. Absolutely loads. Might save a couple of them for the Thursday club on Thursday, as you'd imagine. But yeah, thank you very much for all your questions today. And thank you for listening. A bumper pod today. What a way to start the season and kick things off for the 22-23 campaign. A marvellous performance. And a marvellous performance from all my guests on the podcast. Just before we finish, Dan, what would you like to name the show?
I think based on likes and also the visual expressions of people when I read this one out in this call, that we'll go with Mike Levy's Red Prem Redemption.
Yeah. Clear winner. So sometimes good. On three-word reviews, there is just one that stands head and shoulders above the rest. Mike, excellent work there. Thank you for your contribution. Gents, thank you very much for being on the show today. Farrell Monk, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sammy.
Or as you've put your name in the system that we use to record the podcast, Mana Solomonk.
I try and come up with a new one every single time. I think that's up there with one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's very, very
good. It's good to have a name that's quite versatile.
It's a very versatile name, isn't it? I don't know why. It just seems to work with lots of things. So congratulations to your mum and dad on picking an excellent name.
It's nice to have some sort of positive contribution to this podcast after 6 years.
Oh, don't you do yourself a disservice, Farrell. Dan Cook, thank you.
Thanks for the contract renewal, Sammy. Pleasure to be back.
Oh, good stuff. You signed that extension super early. We activated the option in your contract, the one year extension. So you didn't have a choice, actually. We just we activated it. We had the full power in that one. Drew Healy, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sammy. What an enjoyable way to start the season. I don't think I've stopped drinking since full time, so happy days.
That's partly just being a parent as well, isn't it?
Yeah, just stress.
All right, well, that will do for today. Thank you very much for listening. As I mentioned, Thursday Club will be back in the week with myself, Jack and Peter. More reaction to the Liverpool game and then looking ahead to that Wolves game at Molineux on Saturday, our first away game of the campaign. But until then, have a glorious start to the week. It's lovely and sunny in the UK. We can all have a smile on our face after opening the season in style. When you whites.